Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end of season sale is here and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Story number one. So this happened a few years back, around midsummer. I was 19, home from college, and my parents had dragged me along for a relaxing weekend at our old family lake house. It used to be my favorite place as a kid, not just for swimming, but the sheer solitude of the woods around. Dragonflies skimming the surface of the lake. That whole vibe. I'd sleep with the windows cracked to hear frogs and night critters. I never thought that would be the last time I could stand the place. It started as an ordinary night. Long drive, unpacking suitcases, grilled burgers by the porch, my dad grumbling about the boat dock needing repairs. By midnight, I was showered, windows open like always, half listening to insects and the soft slap of water against the pontoon posts. For some reason, I drifted into one of those half-awake states where you're not sure if you're dreaming, but I definitely heard something weird before I opened my eyes. A scrape-scrape thud coming from the backyard, repetitive, like hands digging in gravel. I remember frowning, thinking maybe a raccoon was going after the compost, but it was too rhythmic, too purposeful. It almost felt deliberate. I sat up, waited, listened harder. The noise went on. Scrape paws, thud, wet earth. I got up, pressed my forehead against the cool window pane, and looked down at the patch of lawn between the house and the water. Nothing, just darkness, occasional flickers from fireflies. The noise continued, moving closer to the waterline, but my eyes didn't catch movement. My heart was pounding, a mix of irritation, probably a muskrat or something, and nagging curiosity. Still, I couldn't shake the feeling underneath it all, the urge to check, some primal nonsense. I slipped on shoes, padded through the creaky hallway and out the side door. The wooden steps felt rough and impossibly cold for summer. Outside, the air hit me with lake mist and rotting moss. The digging sound was louder, if anything. I walked toward the dock, pulse racing, expecting to catch something, someone red-handed. Still nothing, just empty shore, rocks, the twisted willow tree leaning over the edge. The moon was out, but the edges of everything seemed blurry in a way that made me squint and rub my eyes. Cool air crawled along my arms. I made another scan, thinking I'd get back in bed and laugh this off tomorrow. But the scraping stopped. Suddenly, it was dead silent. Not a single cricket. That silence hit in waves, and it made the hair rise on the back of my neck. I was at the edge of the lake now, barefoot on slick stones before I realized I'd left my shoes somewhere back on the path. That's when something nudged me from behind. Not hard, but enough. Like a sudden gust or someone just pushing. It had weight. I fell forward, arms flailing. I hit the water, momentarily stunned. It was swallowing cold. I kicked to stand, but somehow the bottom wasn't there. It made no sense. I'd swum here hundreds of times before, from when I was 4 years old. The water was always shallow this close to shore. I could always stand, always. But my foot just kept searching, kicking below, hitting nothing. Panic set in fast. I tried to swim up, but the water seemed thicker, like swimming through syrup. My mouth filled with lake water, gritty with silt. My arms tangled in something fibrous. Roots? I tasted something metallic. My leg jerked downward. I reached down, frantic, and felt cords, a rope, coarse, rough against my ankle, looping tighter with every kick. That was when I realized it was actually knotted, tied around me, not something I could have caught accidentally. The rope connected to something heavy, a rock or chunk of concrete cold against my bare foot. My lungs were on fire. I screamed, bubbles and mud, nothing reaching the surface. I thrashed with everything I had, pulled at the knot, clawed at my ankle skin, managed to wedge a fingernail between the cord and my leg. But it only got tighter. The darkness pressed closer. There were moments when I thought I saw movement below the surface, flickers of lighter skin or glimmers, small pale hands groping, not my own. I felt pressure on my wrist, like something was holding me down. The water started to buzz in my ears until all I could hear was my own terrified heartbeat. I clawed at whatever held my leg but found nothing but slime and silt. Right as I began to lose vision, the taste of water and moss filling my mouth, something heavy pressed onto my chest, keeping me from moving my arms. Without thinking, I mashed my own hand hard against my face, digging my nails into my cheek, shutting my mouth tight. It felt like I was trying not to scream, trying to muffle something in. My lungs spasmed, then nothing. When I finally woke up, it was morning. I was lying in my own bed, my old bedroom upstairs, sunlight bleeding through yellow curtains. The first shock was how cold my body felt, like I'd been left outside all night. Then I realized my sheets and pajamas were soaking wet, muddy, sticking to my skin. My parents hovered in the doorway, faces anxious and pale. They told me they'd found me sitting on the front porch just before dawn, knees tucked to my chest, my right hand pressed tight to my mouth like I was holding something in, like I was stifling a scream or stopping up a hole. I had mud under my nails and a line of rope burn around my ankle, bruised raw. The weirdest part, my parents hadn't heard a thing. No noise, no splashing, not even footsteps. They just found me, dripping, wide-eyed, freezing. I tried to come up with something, anything that made sense. Night terrors. Maybe I'd had a nightmare, walked into the lake, got scared and panicked. Maybe I tied myself up, but none of that made sense. I'd never slept walk before, and the knot in that rope, the imprint on my ankle lasted for a week, wasn't something I could do underwater, half unconscious. And the digging? Maybe an animal, sure. But the way it moved, the rhythm, the silence after. After that weekend, I stopped going back. My parents put the house up for sale that fall. I tried not to dream about it, but sometimes the feeling came back. Lying in bed, the same pressure on my face, the urge to keep silent, water trickling into my ears. Maybe it was all a nightmare, but every once in a while, usually near lakes, or when the air smells like wet earth and algae, I swear I hear that same digging sound, close by, just out of sight. And I can't help thinking, if I hadn't muffled myself, what else would have come out? Story number two, I was the sheriff for a small rural county in the Midwest for 7 years. If you've ever done a job like mine, you know most nights are just boredom punctuated by drunks, the occasional loose cow, or some bored teenagers with nothing better to do. There's enough peace that even a flickering porch light can raise your hackles. You get so used to the quiet that when something strange actually does happen, it throws your whole worldview off balance. There's a crooked little road at the far end of our biggest lake, barely on the map. At the end of this road sits a house that the locals just call the Lake House. Nobody really remembers who built it. The people who put up the foundation moved out a good 20 years before I even came to town. Nobody lived there for at least a decade. The paint peeled, a screen door hung unhinged, and last time I checked, a family of raccoons had claimed the porch swing. So it was strange driving my usual rounds just after 2 a.m. to see yellow light burning behind its windows. I probably should have radioed it in, got company. But when you're a cop in a town this small, every break-in feels personal. So I parked my car on the gravel and stepped out. There was no wind, just this pressing, thick silence, and the occasional call of a loon echoing over the black water. The moon was high enough to paint the house and the lake in silvery light, so details stuck out. Window glass reflecting orange from inside, a dark shape moving past the curtains. I kept a hand on my sidearm and walked right up. No tire tracks, no sign of another car. Door was cracked open just an inch or two. That's when I had my first weird moment. I hadn't touched anything, not yet, but I could smell something inside, rusty and thick, like old water pipes or blood. I nudged the door with my boot, announcing my presence out of habit, but there was just the creak of hinges. I stood there in the yellow light of the foyer for a second. Something felt off. The hairs on my arms stood up, like the air pressure changed in the house. That's when the door behind me swung shut. It wasn't windy, still dead silent outside, so it shouldn't have moved like that. I spun around, half expecting some stupid prank, but there was nothing. I reached for the light switch, but the lights suddenly cut out all at once like a breaker flipped. The whole house dropped into darkness just as I stepped inside. That was the moment my rational mind started to slip. I got my flashlight out and swept the beam up the staircase. Something wet dripped, tiny little smacks hitting the warped wooden floor. My shoes almost stuck to it. The light flickered, and in that moment, I saw her, plain as day. She was right at the...
Big news! Wayfair's end-of-season sale is here. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair. Plus, amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on home finds in every style. This is your last chance to score end-of-season savings, and it's happening now. Did we mention fast shipping on everything? Don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off now through September 2nd.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free. Select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Top of the stairs. Pale. Dress bunched at the collar. With a slit so deep at her neck I could see the glint of bone beneath. Thick, dark blood soaked her shirt and dripped from her chin, pooling at her bare feet. Her face registered nothing. No fear, anger, pain, just blank. And then before I could even process it, I blinked and she was gone. No movement, no retreating footsteps. Like a light turned off. I've been in rough situations. Mirages happen, shadows jump. But I swear it smelled even heavier then. Old blood, damp carpet, rot. My breathing was way too loud in the silence. I radioed dispatch, but it just spat static, so I started to sweep the rooms. My footsteps echoed hollow, but then, from behind me, there came the unmistakable pressure of a tap on my shoulder. I turned around so quick I nearly lost my footing on the warped floorboards, but there was only the faded wallpaper, peeling where the humidity got to it. My flashlight's beam scanned the empty room, but then I caught movement through the back window. By the lake, just at the edge where the cattails sway, someone was standing. Her again. She was watching me. I know it. Even though her eyes were wrong, hollow, the gaze was heavy, like being stared at from behind one-way glass. I staggered outside, boots crunching gravel. By the time I reached the shore, she had vanished again. I could hear the faintest laughing sound across the water, or maybe it was just a loon. The wind picked up, carrying a strange chill. It made the surface of the water wrinkle, and that's when I noticed the outline. Something pale floating just past the reeds. At first, I thought my eyes were playing tricks, but as I got closer, I saw it was her again. Face up, hair spread like ink, eyes closed as if asleep, her lips barely parted. I must have been crazy, but I had to be sure it wasn't a real corpse. I bent down low, flashlight trembling. My breath made little fogs in the cool night air. For a moment, nothing happened. Then the eyes snapped open, filmed over, but focusing right on mine. The mouth seemed to open in a silent scream, or maybe a laugh, I couldn't tell. All of a sudden, my vision tunneled. The sensation of hands, ice cold and rough, closed right around my neck. For the longest split second, I legit thought I was going to pass out or drown. I tried to break away, cold sweat prickling my hairline, and then just air. She was gone. No body, no splash, nothing. I stumbled back to my cruiser any which way I could, tripping on rocks like some rookie. Inside, the radio worked perfectly. The lights of the lake house were off like nothing had ever been on. When I went back with backup at first light, the inside of the house was completely empty. No puddle, no blood, no footprints. Just old dust and the groan of floorboards. I chalked it up in my report as maybe squatters or a trick of the night. Maybe swamp gas, odd reflections on the water, a stray animal. This is the part that never sits right with me. The next afternoon, a moving truck showed up. I drove by, curious, and watched as a woman stepped out. She was pleasant, young, probably new in town. She just looked ordinary, perfectly intact. I tried to reason with myself. Maybe my mind pasted her face from some old missing person's photo. Maybe stress made me overthink. But every once in a while, long after my shift was over, I'd see her silhouette in the window of that lake house, staring out at the water. And sometimes, late at night, I felt a prickling between my shoulder blades, the tap of an icy hand, just as the wind rustled through the reeds. I never saw her at the lake again. Not like that night. But sometimes I dream about those hollow eyes snapping open, and I wake up gasping for air, heart pounding. I tell myself it was just stress and shadows, but I still never drive past that house alone. Not after dark. Not anymore. Story number 3. I never really believed in haunted places, or ghosts, or anything even close to the supernatural. If something freaky happened, my first instinct was always to find the logical explanation. I still try to do that even now, but after what happened at the lake house, I feel like something inside me has snapped, or maybe just gone permanently sideways. I married Derek 3 years ago, and things were good. Normal, I guess, in the way lives tick over. Job routines, minor arguments, cooking dinner, all that. We bought the lake house because Derek loved the quiet, and I went along because I liked watching the water twist with light at dusk, and the grocery store was only half an hour away. At night, it got deeply, unsettlingly silent, but you could chalk that up to nature. I'm a light sleeper, always have been. That particular night was colder than usual for late September, one of those nights where it feels too cold under the covers, but the air on your face makes your skin tingle. Derek was out cold, breathing heavy. I lay there, bleary and staring at the ceiling, hopes of sleep remote. I don't remember what exactly pushed me to get up and go out. It was partly restlessness, partly wanting to see the moon's reflection on the water. I pulled on a sweatshirt and quietly slipped outside. The world was washed out in dull blues and silvers. Thin mist was curling over the lake's surface, like something wriggling and alive. The trees creaked every now and then, brushing against each other, their leaves suddenly louder in the chill. I walked along the dock, my shoes thudding softly. The whole time there was this faint, coppery smell. Faint at first, then sharper, like pennies held in your mouth. I froze when I saw it. At first it looked like just a bundle of clothes or maybe a deer that had come too close to the water. But then I realized it was a dead body, half submerged at the edge of the dock. One arm oddly straight, the rest of the body turned away from me. I could see the face, slack and pale, His mouth twisted like it had been caught mid-word. There was a line across his neck, too wide and too deep, blood sluggishly welling up and spilling into the water. Instantly, I heard the lapping, strangely loud as the blood spread and clouded the surface, turning the moon into a blurry red smear. My legs wanted nothing to do with any of this, but I couldn't turn away. I stared, and I still don't know how real this was. The face twitched, just the tiniest, sick flicker of the eyelid, and the tip of his tongue peeked out as if he was about to scream. That jolted my body back to life. My whole heart went ice cold. I turned and ran, half tripping up the porch steps, wrenching the door open almost off its hinges. Inside was worse. It was dark except for the split moonlight thrown through the living room window. There, standing not 5 feet from me, was Derek. Only everything about his posture was off. The way he stood, grin stretching inhuman, eyes slightly unfocused and shiny. He was holding a kitchen knife, bright streaks of red still glinting wet in the moonlight. He didn't move. I barely took that in before I bolted again, this time for the rickety outhouse we used for storage, slamming the door and sliding the lock. I curled up behind boxes, trying to breathe quietly, trying to convince myself Derek was sleepwalking or this was a nightmare. My phone was cold in my hands as I dialed 911. I hardly remember what I said. Minutes turned liquid and stretched. Soon I heard banging at the house's back door, long, deliberate, metallic. Something scraping the deck outside like someone dragging a wet sack. Then splashes in the black water, large, violent, like something big threshing or being pulled under. There were voices too, unmistakable, though muffled by the outhouse walls. Sometimes a long, gurgling laugh. Sometimes Derek's voice echoing my name like a taunt. Sometimes it sounded like more than one person, all mouths warping my name together. I wedged myself behind the crates, heart racing and fingers numb with cold. I started hallucinating shadowy shapes out there, figures moving odd and jerky past the tiny window slat, or maybe just moonlight warping through the glass. Then the banging moved to the outhouse door, slow, steady thumps. Someone pressed against the wood, breathing in wheezy rattles, trying the handle over and over. I dug my nails into my palms. Sometimes I swear it sounded like the dead man from the lake, mouth full of water but still speaking, scraping bone across wood. At some point, I blacked out or lost time. I know I woke up to sunlight slanting hard through the cracks and an unnatural quiet. No more banging, no more voices, no more cold breath on the walls. My phone was dead. I waited an hour, then crept out, expecting to find pools of blood or broken things scattered. The house was spotless. No sign of Derek. He wasn't in our bed, not on the dock, not anywhere. No body by the lake. No blood. The kitchen knife set was full. The cops came. I told them everything, feeling more and more ridiculous as I talked. Their faces went from concern to confusion in minutes. One cop suggested Derek might have just wandered off, maybe a fight I'd forgotten. Another said people sometimes imagine things under stress, especially in unfamiliar, isolated environments. They searched and found nothing, no evidence of struggle, no footprints except my own. They interviewed me more than once, and I felt that little kernel of doubt grow. Maybe all of that was my brain's nightmare, sleep-deprived and freezing. Maybe Derek just left me. But why? Where was he? They searched for Derek for months. Flyers, missing persons bulletins, online threads. Sometimes the lake would cough up a shoe, or a fishing lure, or a dead animal, but never anything human. At some point, people in town started to avoid my eyes at the market, so I stopped going. At night, I kept all the lights on. I barely started to accept that I'd never know what happened when it happened again. I came home after a shift at work, the sun slanting low through the window. I stepped inside and immediately smelled that copper tang again, weirdly strong and fresh. The house was quiet, but the quiet felt wrong, thick, as if sound was sucked out of the air. That's when I saw Derek sitting on the couch, head slumped at a strange angle, blood soaking through the cushion and dribbling to the floor. The wound, his neck, just like the body from that night. But his face was smiling, a grotesquely wide grin, gums bare, and in his hand was the same knife, perfectly clean. When I blinked, everything changed. The couch was empty. No blood anywhere. No Derek. I've moved since then, tried to start over, but sometimes when I hear water splashing at night, I'm right back on the edge of that dock, watching red mist curl over the moon. I tell myself it wasn't real, that it was just cold, stress, tricks of the dark. Some part of me still wants to believe it, but I can't trust anyone. Not my eyes, not what I hear, definitely not myself. And I have to wonder if Derek is out there, or if it was ever really him at all. Story number four. Last summer, I thought a family trip north would be the escape we all needed. Nothing complicated. Just 4 days at this log cabin on a small secluded lake in Ontario. Our kids are 6 and 9, old enough to actually remember a vacation. The drive was endless, even by Canadian standards. But the lake, when we got there, looked clean and glassy. No traffic, no phone bars. My wife laughed about how cliche it all was. I laughed too, for her sake. By the evening, we had unpacked, canoes untied from the roof racks, and the kids were already skimming puddles off the end of the dock with their hands. It was about to get dusk when I decided to take them out on the water, one slow glide before bedtime. Always figured lakes like these were teeming with bass, or at least minnows flashing below the surface. But as soon as we pushed off, the stillness felt off. The water's surface was so clear, I could see the muddy bottom a long way out. But there were no reeds, no insects buzzing the water, no darting shapes, nothing. Even the frogs were silent. I mentioned it to my wife. She shrugged. I picked up the paddle, meaning to make a joke, but my voice sounded weird out there, like it was crushed by thick air. We looped along the edge and then headed back, the kids half asleep, my wife just watching the sky. The sun was so low the trees looked on fire. That's when I noticed something. Right on the opposite shore, maybe 30 meters away, just under the pines, there were eyes. Not animal retina shine from a deer or raccoon, but twin orbs of hard, bright red, like LEDs. The way they glowed didn't match the lighting, all lurid and wrong, and they didn't so much as blink. I guess I stared for a second or two, but every hair on my neck stood up. I blinked and they were gone. For a while I reasoned I was just seeing things, tired from driving, dust in my eyes, a reflection from the cabin window. I could even imagine a prank, a stray hunting cam or a flashlight picking up red, but it seemed dumb. I never mentioned it. We put the kids down, made cocoa, and listened to loons. I made an excuse about needing air and stood looking out over the water until it was full dark. It was almost 2 a.m. when I jolted awake, the kind of instant wake-up when you know something isn't right. My wife was breathing soft beside me. The cottage was all creaking wood and radiators ticking down. Then I heard hammering from the dock, a wet, irregular pounding, like someone driving heavy spikes into the boards. Except there was no reason for that, not out here, not at night. My heart started going a little too fast, so I told myself it was just the ice settling, or otters under the dock, or some kid from a nearby cabin. I snuck outside, half ashamed, but I couldn't just lie there. The air was cold and everything looked different, a soaking, luminescent blue, like you get with deep fog on long exposures. I stared at the dock, but there was nobody there. I almost went back in. Then something moved, a faint shape, tall and thin, standing right at the edge of the dock and facing me. I froze up. It didn't make any sound. I should have felt embarrassed, but the only thing I recall is this wave of old animal fear, like being 3 and lost at a carnival. The thing pivoted slightly and those same red eyes flared out of nothing, like 2 coals but wet, definitely wet, like something alive was burning bright just under a clear film. It wasn't an after image. My body just went cold. I stumbled back, tripping over my own feet, trying not to scream, and then the thing was gone, not drifted away, just not there. I spun to bolt back to the cabin and my legs tangled hard in something. For a moment, I thought it was roots or some kind of weed. I'd stepped in them before, but this didn't feel normal. The next thing I knew, I was lifted up, legs in the air, head rushing, shoulders burning. It was like something had cinched around my ankles and yanked. My body swung side to side, and I realized I was hanging upside down from the bend of a skeletal birch right by the dock. It made zero sense. I hadn't even seen rope. I tried to yell, but it came out weak. Below me, the silhouette was back, clearer now, just shadow and spindle and those two fixed red eyes. It stood almost close enough to touch. I couldn't hear it breathing or moving. All I could feel was this crushing weight on my chest, like my lungs wouldn't work. It felt like the air was being dragged out of me through a straw, like the time I almost drowned as a kid, just burning, then numb. The next thing I remember is hitting the ground, arms and legs scraping bark and dirt, and crawling, animal style, until I forced myself onto my feet and staggered back inside. My skin stung everywhere, and my shirt's collar was torn. I tend to catastrophize, so for an hour I sat hunched in the bathroom, checking every inch of my arms and legs. Nothing but a little mud, no cuts. I finally just sat down on the floor, shivering, until morning came. Daylight turned it all embarrassing and small. But when I looked in the mirror, my whole neck was ringed with handprints, finger-shaped, darker bruises, like someone had tried to choke me. There was no way to explain it. They faded in a couple days. For the rest of the trip, I said nothing. I made up excuses to stay indoors. I never went back down to the dock. I kept seeing it, the silhouette with the red eyes. First, every couple of days, sometimes layered over the edge of mirrors or in the window glint just before sleep. Sometimes, just out of the corner of my eye, inside the house, its eyes boring straight through me. It never did anything but stare. Each morning after I saw it, I woke up with strange marks, scratches, flaring welts along my arms, bruises like fingerprints, sometimes so fresh they stung. My wife noticed and asked, but I blamed it on old allergies or a fall. I actually went to the doctor twice, got blood tested, just in case. Everything came back normal. After a few months, it faded. The marks faded too. Sometimes I tell myself it was just sleep paralysis or some neurological thing, but there's always a rational angle if you work it hard enough. But I don't go canoeing. Not anymore. And sometimes, just before waking up, if the light gets weird in the room, I swear I can feel those red eyes settling on me, alive and staring, waiting for me to look back. Story number 5. I never used to believe in lake stories. Not the ones you hear in bars and cabins, the ghost boat tales, the shadow in the trees stuff that gets passed around when the sun's down and the beer's flowing. I always figured it was a mix of boredom, whiskey, and old guy bravado. Hell, I still want to believe that. Even now, I can list for you a dozen reasonable explanations for what happened at Bear Claw Lake last spring. But my gut says otherwise. My buddy Nate invited me to his uncle's lake cottage as soon as the ice finally melted. I said yes quick. I needed the quiet, the air, and maybe to be away from my own head for a weekend. The place was nothing fancy. Log walls, linoleum kitchen, pair of musty bedrooms, and a deck that sloped like a ship's prow toward the shore. Down by the water, right where the sandy grass ended, was that rowboat, heavy oak, weathered green paint. The kind of old craft that's one big solid piece and has a name stenciled on the rear, RITA. Nate's uncle babied that thing. Every fall, he'd drag it up, well above the usual waterline, and wrap a weather-pitted iron chain 3 times around the nearest pine trunk. The chain was heavy enough to moor a tugboat and had this comically oversized black padlock. First morning, we ate cold maple donuts, threaded worms on hooks, and made plans. Second morning, plans changed. Nate got a panicked call, some paperwork his uncle needed to track down, so he offered to run into town. I stayed behind, promising to keep the coffee warm. I woke up late that second day to a weird emptiness. The way the sun came in under the curtains, the quiet that felt expectant, all of it was a little off. I wandered down to the water to see if any of the loons were out, only to freeze about halfway there. The boat was gone. Where Rita always rested, nothing but a dead patch of flattened grass and the ancient pine with the loose chain draped around like a snake. I ran both hands through my hair, blinking hard, but that didn't make the boat reappear. I checked the slope. Nothing. No gouges or ruts, not even a drag mark in the muddy patches, just clean ground. blown with spring pine needles. The chain was snapped halfway through, not unlocked. The links at the break were dark orange, freshly exposed, not all flaky like the rest. Neighbors? I walked along the shoreline for maybe a quarter mile each way, peeked through the brush, and all I saw was water mottled by last fall's leaves and the odd camping beer can. No footprints, no tire marks on the thin track the ATV sometimes made. I tried to picture how someone could drag that monster down to the lake, haul it away, and leave everything else untouched. No logic to it. I kept trying to sell myself on a rational story. Maybe the chain gave out, and a hard wind rolled the boat into the lake, but the surface was glassy, untouched. Maybe a neighbor or the wildlife rangers took it for some dumb reason, except everyone knew not to touch the Rita, and there sure as hell weren't any limping animals with the muscle to carry off a 200-pound boat. No hoof prints, nothing. Nate got back late. He was half furious, half stunned, then spent an hour combing online for nearby security footage, which, shocker, came up empty. His uncle didn't have wireless or a camera, just some ancient radio and old fishing magazines. The next day, just to cement this whole episode as unexplainable, nothing happened at all. It was just the lake, gulls, and the twitch of fish at the end of our lines. We mostly avoided talking about it, except to joke that maybe there were privileged beavers out here that collected vintage boats. The weirdness, though, it crept in with that next night when Nate and his uncle were out with a neighbor watching the game. Around 2 a.m., I was the only one at the place, laid up in the guest bedroom. Big open window, cool air, the white noise of distant frogs. Sometime near 3, I snapped awake. It wasn't a dream or a nightmare. I just jerked into consciousness with my heart working way too hard. I think it was a sound that did it. Not gunshot loud, but persistent. The low, warped creak of wood. The way old planks sound when you shift your weight with water underneath. Then came another noise, softer but unmistakable. The wet shuffle of oarlocks groaning, rubbery slap of water hitting against hull. It wasn't far off or faint. It was right below my window, like if I reached out, I could touch the boat. For 5 solid minutes, the sounds were so real that I pressed my nails into my palm to ground myself in case this was a dream. I stared at the ceiling, not daring to pull back the blind. But curiosity wins. I sat up, eased to the window, and nudged the shade an inch. The lake was bright with moonlight, blue-white reflections, so clear you could count every ripple. But there was nothing. No disturbance, no shadow, just the empty dock and the chain lying loose in the grass. The water was glass calm. Still, the sounds kept going. Groaning, the muted thud of something bumping against the dock itself, tiny trickling splashes. I watched for what felt like forever, every nerve stretched, half hoping I'd see something rational. A deer fallen in, a neighbor paddling by. Nothing showed up. Then mid-sound, everything cut off. Back to chittering insects and the faint hum of wood settling. I didn't sleep the rest of the night. Stared at the ceiling till the sky went gray, heart trying to logic itself out of this mess. I expected the boat, if it ever came back, would be battered, beached, or at least leave behind some kind of trail. But when I finally went outside that morning, there it was. The Rita, chained up like it had never left, dry as an attic rafter. The snap chain was gone, replaced with a matching old link, rust and all, so carefully retwisted it was nearly seamless. There were no marks in the grass, no water stains, no signs of recent use. Nate saw it too. He thought I'd been pulling some elaborate prank. I wished I was. If I hadn't heard those sounds, if I hadn't felt something on the water, right in my bones, I could have rationalized all of it as a slip of memory or some neighbor's dumb joke. But I keep replaying those noises. The impossible chain, the sudden return, the way the air felt almost charged before it all went silent. Maybe if I stretch, I can tell myself it was the wind. Old boards shifting, a beaver passing through at the perfect time. But I can't explain that feeling. Deep and low, right before the creaks began. Like the lake was holding its breath, as if something was about to surface. I still go out to lakes sometimes. I always check the boats, the chains, the grass. I don't really expect to see anything. But sometimes when it's late and the water's calm, I swear I hear a boat, just out of sight. And I can't shake the sense that if I keep listening, one night I'll hear it again, close enough to touch. And this time, maybe, something will be waiting for me to look. Story number 6. I'm the guy who groans at horror movie jump scares, but there are some things that don't let you just wave them away, no matter how much you want to. Earlier this year, I needed to unplug. Things had gone sideways after a rough breakup and some family drama. When I found a discount on a lake house retreat on a small island, advertised as pristine, secluded, the perfect place to find inner peace, I just booked it, barely glancing at the details. The deal was so good because it was the rainy season, and apparently nobody wanted to hang out on a foggy, drenched island. I didn't care. I took the ferry out with a heavy duffel and a couple of books. The first day was uneventful. Dense gray rain drifted across the lake in relentless sheets, smearing the treetops into smoky green and blanketing everything in the endless, wet hush. The air smelled like wet earth, the loam so heavy you could taste it. You don't realize how loud the world is until you're somewhere like that. Just rain and the occasional creak of wood as the house settles. The second night, the rain eased up for a while. I was flipping through channels, bored out of my mind, when I started to notice a faint, distant hum. It sounded like singing, but so soft that I kept treating it like background noise. The way you ignore the fridge humming or the plumbing at night. It kept drifting into my awareness. High-pitched, melodic, almost bleeding into the wind. I stepped onto the porch, half expecting it to stop immediately and prove it was just something electrical buzzing. But it didn't. The sound seemed to be coming from the shore, where the patchy trees created dark silhouettes against the near black lake. That's when I saw her, standing stock still at the edge of the water, one arm extended, holding a lantern that barely pierced the fog. She wore a pale dress, hair down to her elbows, and looked entirely out of place, like she'd stepped out of some older time. I instinctively waved and shouted, but no response. The singing stopped. She just kept standing there in the drizzle, lantern glowing softly. I called out again, a little sharper, and took a step forward, but suddenly she was gone. Not vanished into thin air, really. Just not there when I blinked. The lantern light winked out as though someone had blown out a candle. I went back inside feeling stupid. Maybe it was some local who had boated over, or a caretaker. But the rain made that seem unlikely, and anyway, I hadn't seen any other boats. I told myself it was probably a trick of the light, even though the hairs on my arms hadn't gone down. I didn't sleep much that night. The next day was more rain, more aimless pacing, more empty lake. I tried reading, I tried films, I tried walking along the muddy little trails, and after a while, the sense of isolation started to feel less peaceful and more like being swallowed. That night, right around midnight, I woke up, singing again. This time I didn't hesitate. I got dressed and went outside, determined to catch whoever was messing with me. She was there at the shore again, lantern and all. Only she was farther up the path to the lake house. I made my way half down the porch steps when, in my peripheral vision, I spotted the lantern's soft yellow glow at the opposite side of the clearing. I looked left. She was there. I looked right. She was there, too. It was like that every which way I turned. The lantern light peeking between trees, always just where my vision ended. It wasn't fast or flashy, just quietly omnipresent. I tried to play it cool, walking all around the house, keeping my flashlight steady and my jaw clenched. Every few seconds, the lantern would bob into view, always maintaining a precise distance. She never came closer than the ring of half-dead ferns around the lake house, but never retreated farther either. The third night, I seriously considered leaving, but the storms made the ferry impossible, so I tried to ignore the singing and just hunkered down. I locked the windows, latched the doors, and left the hallway lights on. Felt ridiculous, acting like I was in some cliche, but I had to do something. At 2 a.m., the power flickered and cut out. The lake house felt instantly colder, darker, as if the darkness had thickness. The singing was louder than ever, echoing weirdly in the rafters. This time, when I went to the window, the woman was standing halfway up the path, lantern held higher than before, face impossible to make out. I didn't go outside that time. I just stood at the window for ages, heart skittering, breath fogging the glass. She took a step closer every few minutes. I tried filming on my phone, but the camera showed nothing but rain and darkness. The lantern glow didn't register at all. Eventually, she stopped 10 feet from the porch and just vanished like a switch got flipped. For hours after, I thought I saw flickers of light through every window. The final night, the air felt charged, swollen somehow, the rain hammering down with a pressure that made my eardrums ache. Just before midnight, my phone rang with a no-caller ID for half a second, but nothing was there when I answered. The singing started again, but now it was right outside, right above me. I forced myself out onto the porch, flashlight gripped tight enough to hurt my hand. The woman floated above the roof. Floated isn't the right word. She just hung there, the rain avoiding her, the lantern burning steadily beside her face. She looked down. There was no expression, no certainty that it was a woman at all. Just the shape, the dress, the light. Then a crash overhead, something hitting the roof with a rattling thud. My heart nearly stopped. When I stumbled back, the lantern and figure were gone. The only thing left was the slow, dripping sound of water from the gutters and the smell of wet wood. At dawn, a couple of shingles had cracked and slid off the edge of the house. No footprints, no muddy traces, nothing. Maybe an animal, maybe not. At checkout, I asked if any staff had been using lanterns by the shore. The guy at the desk looked puzzled, checked his books, then told me I was the only guest. No one else on the ferry, no caretakers stationed on site after the heavy rains. Rainy season, hardly anyone comes. When I left the island, I swore I saw a pale light flickering in the trees as the boat pushed away, just for a second, where the water blurred into mist. I've tried to forget it, to reason it away, but sometimes when I see water in the distance on a rainy night, I think I catch sight of a lantern just outside the corner of my eye. Story number 7. There's this lake house about 20 minutes from the town, up an uneven gravel path that turns to sticky mud in the spring. The house used to belong to the Millers, a couple well into their 80s but upright and lively, always pausing to chat with their arms full of groceries or plants. They'd offered me some cash just to keep the place aired out and clean since I lived nearby and worked odd jobs anyway. I didn't think much about it once I'd settled into my routine. Every weekend, I'd head up there with basic supplies, radio tuned low, and spend an afternoon sweeping up rodent droppings, scrubbing away stubborn mildew, and vacuuming the persistent dust that always found its way in. Nothing ever stood out much. It was a basic, creaky old house with a damp smell and cold spots that never went away. No matter how hard I tried to heat the place, I'd gotten used to the ticks, spider webs, weird stains on the boards that never quite lifted. But on an especially rainy Saturday in September, I found something that felt a bit off. I was dusting out the master bedroom closet, the air dense with the smell of old perfume and cardboard, when my rag caught on something wedged between the floorboards. It wasn't much, just a necklace, the kind I might have found at a thrift store or maybe dug up in a backyard. The chain was dull, probably brass, hung with a heavy oval locket and a cluster of cracked, discolored stones that used to be red and green. What was odd was there was this waxy, pitch-black residue clinging to both the clasp and the rim of the central gem, almost as if someone had dipped the pendant in melted candle soot. I ignored the slight chill that ran up my spine and just chalked it up to a dropped trinket marinated in mildew and filth. With a bit of water and soap, most of the black stuff came off, though a sticky tint was still left behind. I figured I'd hand it to Mrs. Miller the next time they visited. That night, though, something was wrong. I couldn't sleep. I'd left the necklace on my nightstand, and somehow, in the dead hush of 3 a.m., my room felt different, too quiet. I swear the thing was glowing. Not bright, not casting any real light. Just a dull, sickly green that made the shape pulse and swell if you stared too long. I convinced myself it was just the reflection from a faraway street lamp on the cracked stones. Still, the longer I looked at it, the more uneasy I felt, like something was pressing on my chest. I buried the necklace in a drawer and tried to sleep, convincing myself it was just fatigue. Night 2, the weather was foul, and the air felt electric in a way I couldn't explain. This time, for reasons I can't name, I tried on the necklace. Maybe I was curious. Maybe I just wanted to see if the glow would follow me, or if it was all in my head. The instant the chain touched my skin, I felt a surge of pain, sharp and biting, as if someone had poured acid straight onto my neck. My skin sizzled under the metal. I tried to rip it off, but it had fused to my flesh. My heart thundered, and a high-pitched whine filled my head, drowning out everything else. I swear I screamed, but the sound seemed to choke, vanishing into the walls. As I watched in the faint light of the hallway, my skin started to shift. It began at my ankles, a ripple, then a greenish hue, almost like moss or mold, crept up my legs. My arms followed, blotching with veins colored like bruised spinach. The pain was total, almost hot enough to make my teeth ache. My mind splintered with panic. My fingertips turned numb, vision cloudy except for the burning green. Time seemed to collapse. Minutes felt like hours. Just as my hands began to go stiff, clammy, slimy even, the necklace suddenly fell to the floor with a small thud. I scrambled back, half crawling away. My skin slowly faded back to its normal color, though it stung and tingled for hours. A faint line burned into my neck. I stayed on the floor until sunrise, not daring to touch the thing again. I tried to throw it out. The first time, I wrapped it in three plastic bags and dumped it in a dumpster down the road, miles from the house. The next morning, when I woke up, it was on my nightstand again, the chain coiled, deliberately, almost thoughtfully, beside my glasses. The smell in the room was different too, like something had burned old plastic. I trashed it again, stuffed it into the lake mud, dropped it down a storm drain. But every time the necklace came back. Sometimes it was on the kitchen table, sometimes at the edge of my bed, or worse, nestled in the laundry basket as if it had been washed along with my clothes. Once I found it under my pillow, black streaks seeping into the fabric. I stopped sleeping altogether after that, and the burning mark around my neck would flare up whenever the necklace was near. I decided the only thing left was to return it exactly where I found it. I went back to the lake house, up to the closet where the boards still creaked just so, and slipped the necklace into the gap between the wood. The instant I let go, it felt as though a weight lifted off me. I left without looking back, convinced that was the end of it. A week later, the Millers returned. I went to greet them, pretending nothing had happened. When I saw Mrs. Miller in her Sunday best, she was wearing the same necklace, same locket, cracked jewels and all, with that unmistakable smear of black still clinging near the clasp. I tried to bring it up, mentioning with all the awkwardness I could muster that I'd found something similar while cleaning. She just laughed, brushing me off, saying that necklace was an old anniversary gift, never been lost or misplaced. She claimed she'd worn it every day since her husband gave it to her. I tried to smile, pretending it didn't matter. But afterward, as I walked away, a cold shiver ran down my spine. In the late afternoon light, the stones in her necklace seemed to catch something that wasn't light at all, a green pulse deep inside, just for a second. I told myself it was probably just a trick of the sun, or maybe I was more exhausted than I realized. Still, that night when I got home, the faint, bitter scent of burned plastic lingered in my room. I found a single black stain on my pillowcase, already hardened and flaking as I touched it. Maybe there's some explanation, a chemical reaction, a hallucinatory effect from old mold in the walls, some trick of anxiety and routine. I tell myself that's what it is, every night before trying to sleep. But ever since, I check my bedside first thing, just to be sure. Thanks for watching. Don't leave before leaving a like to this video. Also hit the subscribe button to support my work. And as always, have a horrific nightmare, my dear.
Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end of season sale is here and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3 quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.